Man, do I just love wrestling. I mean, how could you not if you're a wrestling fan? Options, ladies and gentlemen. There are so many options. Regardless of what you follow or where your particular tastes align, there is always something out there for everyone to enjoy. We are coming off the heels of one of the greatest pro wrestling weekends of all time, and yet there is still plenty to talk about a week later. You are listening to the Royal Ramble, and I'm your host, Blaine the Brain, and in the almighty words of, and I know I'm not going to do this nearly as good as Miss Samantha Irvin, but in the almighty words of the new undisputed WWE Universal Heavyweight Champion of the World, Cody Rhodes, what do you want to talk about? Well, we can talk about just about anything you like, and that's why I do this. I'm a fan first and foremost, and I haven't asked for a dime from anybody because I love you all for being here, and thank you for all your now 3 years of support and contributions to the board. Where do I even start? Well, why don't we talk about what the world is talking about, but I wouldn't say for any good reason. Unfortunately, it's not WrestleMania, at least not for the time being, but I will continue my review later in the show. It appears that everyone is talking about what went down on AEW Dynamite this week, particularly because AEW can't seem to stop talking about WWE. We had two occurrences of this on Wednesday's show, and I believe they were back-to-back segments. Firstly, the Young Bucks, to their credit, actually delivered on their promise. It wasn't a bait and switch, as I'm sure many of us suspected. They actually revealed the footage of what went down between Phil Brooks and Jack Perry at last year's All In pay-per-view in London, prior to Punk's match with Samoa Joe. Personally, I didn't see any conceivable reason or purpose for them airing this footage. People have speculated that maybe this could be a way to reintroduce Jungle Boy back into the fold, but even in that case, I can't imagine that this did Jungle Boy or AEW any favors by letting this air. It just presented the company in such a negative light, and it truly felt like admittance that the only way their talent can get over is by mentioning the competition, which we all know for a fact isn't true. But this is the way it came across, at least to me. Perry actually did wrestle at the New Japan Windy City Riot event this weekend in a match against Shota Umino, and even though it was a losing effort, Perry indeed leaned right into the negative fan response that I know he would have expected, especially in Chicago. They showered him with dueling chants of "you choked out" and "no he didn't." He also wore his scapegoat armband and Cry Me a River ring jacket. But as far as the Bucks go, I thought they were reaching so hard in that segment to try and link it to their feud with FTR, and it clearly didn't work and backfired as they essentially got their own audience to chant for a WWE talent. Again, I don't know for what purpose they chose to air this footage other than maybe to stroke some egos. This may be an early favorite for worst angle of the year. I can't imagine anything else even coming close unless Katie Vick rises from the dead. And then I believe it was the very next segment that Will Ospreay was, I think, supposed to cut a promo on his Dynasty opponent Bryan Danielson, and instead chose to take the low road by not only addressing but aggressively responding to the, let's be real, general comments made by WWE CCO Paul Levesque at the WrestleMania press conference last weekend. The difference there is that Levesque simply answered a question, while Ospreay addressed one that was never asked. And again, I can't see AEW coming out on the winning end here because WWE has much more mainstream attention and they can go on Jimmy Fallon or any other universally recognized media platform and shame AEW if they wanted to, but for some reason, AEW chooses to broadcast and air out their grievances on a show that only their loyal niche fan base is watching. So again, I ask, for what purpose? Who outside of the wrestling community is even talking about this? I'm not usually one to choose sides, and I'm usually pretty neutral, but I think AEW brought this all on themselves this week, and I think you can chalk a one in the loss column for that company. Now then, switching gears and focusing on the more positive stuff this week, I did kind of mention it in the last segment, so I'll kind of go there next, and I urge you to check out the New Japan Chicago show from this past Friday. You may see some familiar favorites, including AEW's Jon Moxley, Impact's Nick Nemeth, and Mustafa Ali, and other New Japan talent and legends. The matches were all really good. I was especially impressed by the one-on-one encounter between Nemeth and Tomohiro Ishii. There were also a few surprises and post-match angles, which we don't see a lot of in New Japan, or at least a casual follower like myself hasn't. I mean, we've seen post-match attacks and all that, but they did an angle after the tag title match where Fred Rosser, the former Darren Young in WWE, turned on his partner, former UFC fighter Tom Lawler, and then proceeded to cut Lawler's hair. That part kind of felt unusual for a New Japan show. But it just kind of goes to show and really emphasizes what I've been saying for years, and that's that there is really no distinction between pro wrestling and sports entertainment. They're one and the same, and you know what? I like it all. Of course, most people tend to associate the term sports entertainment with Vince McMahon and the WWE, but I don't think it ever originated there, especially when you consider characters like Gorgeous George and superstar Billy Graham. It's all a part of pro wrestling. Now, ordinarily at this time, I would be going through my weekly news brief, but there's just too much to cover, so I'll continue with that on next week's episode. Last weekend, I did mention a few of the other major events, and I love that not only is WrestleMania about WWE, but it allows fans to enjoy all other events in that particular city, and also provides more opportunity to some of the talent not booked at WrestleMania to work elsewhere, as we saw with Charlie Dempsey and Shayna Baszler at Bloodsport. AEW also heavily promoted their annual Supercard of Honor event that took place on the Friday night. One of the featured matches on the card which I was most looking forward to was actually not an AEW match. They advertised a six-woman tag to be presented by Japan's Stardom promotion. I gotta say that while I thoroughly enjoyed it, I also thought it was largely forgettable, and I don't think there was really a standout performer in the bunch. And that's not a knock on any of the talent involved, but more because the match just didn't stand out enough for me. And I think the same can be said about the other women's matches on the show. It's very rare to see more than two on an AEW card to begin with, but I particularly didn't care for the finish in the match between Billy Starks and Queen Amanada. I thought it was very cheesy, and much like Roxanne Perez in WWE, I just don't buy Starks as a heel. The match that I was actually least looking forward to was the match that I most enjoyed. It was the main event between Eddie Kingston and Mark Briscoe. For anyone who's been following my post, you should know that I don't often speak very highly of Kingston, though I must say he's been on a roll lately. I thought the storytelling in this match was fantastic, and I loved the post-match celebration, and it just felt like a special moment for both guys. I thought it was one of Kingston's best matches ever, and probably Briscoe's best match to date in the new ROH and AEW, and that's including the two FTR matches. Before I get to the WrestleMania rundown, I wanted to talk a bit about the aftermath. Everybody always looks forward to the WrestleMania Monday, and as the company prepares for the next talent draft, we saw some notables from NXT appear on Raw, including current women's champion Roxanne Perez and current heavyweight champion Ilya Dragunov. And I would say both look very impressive and are probably going to end up somewhere else other than NXT in the draft, which begs the question of what happens to their titles. Well, we saw on NXT this week the surprising outcome for Bron Breakker and Baron Corbin, the Wolf Dogs, who ended up losing their belts in a huge upset to Nathan Fraser and Axiom, which kind of made me think why they didn't just do the title change at the pay-per-view. And then on SmackDown, we also saw the debut of the newest Bloodline member, Tama Tonga, the son of Haku, who made a name for himself in New Japan for the last decade or so. And it looks like Jimmy Uso is officially on the outs with the Bloodline, while Solo has kind of stepped up to become the unofficial leader in Roman Reigns' absence. I'm assuming this will mean that we see an Uso's reunion against the new Bloodline tag team, but an interesting development for sure. And speaking of interesting developments, we saw a bunch of them at WrestleMania Sunday last week, including the TV return of Stephanie McMahon, who played the role similar to her husband the previous night by basically welcoming everyone to the show and also thanking us for our viewership and continued support. Stephanie was actually preceded by R&B group The Warren Treaty, who performed a rendition of God Bless America, and I have to say that I liked that they chose a different opening song each night instead of the usual America the Beautiful, and I think they knocked it out of the park. Michael Cole was not nearly as critical of the weather on this night, as it apparently had gotten significantly warmer by the Sunday. Opening the show was the WWE World Championship match between defending champion Seth Rollins, who came out with some kind of parade, similar to one of those jazz bands in New Orleans, or even the Rosebuds that used to follow Adam Rose around. Remember him? And Rollins was challenged by Drew McIntyre, who was performed out to the ring by a Scottish band to the tune of Scotland the Brave, and I'm not gonna lie, but I legit thought Roddy Piper had come back to life for a second. CM Punk was already out on commentary for the match, and as the bell rang, McIntyre scored with an immediate claymore, which earned a two count. McIntyre then followed Seth to the floor and started to target his back and knee, both of which were injured in the tag match on night one. McIntyre delivered a series of belly-to-belly throws at ringside, and after just about every one, he gave a death stare to Punk, who was on commentary. McIntyre then grabbed a cell phone from a fan at ringside who we'd later learn was his wife or girlfriend or something, and took a selfie. McIntyre went for a future shock DDT, but was too preoccupied with Punk, allowing Seth enough time to counter into a pedigree. Seth then hit a stomp and tried for another one from the top rope, but missed. McIntyre then missed a claymore, but avoided a pedigree attempt and countered into a future shock for two. Drew then signaled to Punk that he's going for the GTS. Seth countered, but McIntyre hit a claymore on the rebound for two. Drew then cleared the announce table, but is again preoccupied with Punk, allowing Seth to run across and hit a stomp into the table. Back in the ring, McIntyre hit another claymore for a near fall and then got right back up and hit another one to finally put Seth away and win the world title for the first time in front of a live audience. Drew goes to kiss his wife at ringside and then walks up right to where Punk is sitting and starts dangling the title belt in front of Punk's face and taunting him. McIntyre then stands in front of Punk on the table and does a cross chop like DX, and that causes Punk to finally retaliate. He trips up McIntyre up and takes off his arm brace to beat Drew with it. Punk then blows a kiss to Drew's wife, and this leads to Judgment Day music, and Damian Priest comes sprinting out with the Money in the Bank briefcase. He nails Drew in the face with it and tells the ref he's cashing in right now. Priest immediately hits the South of Heaven after the bell and pins Drew to become the new WWE World Heavyweight Champion, which, if you read my predictions on the board, is almost exactly what I suggested. I love this as it sets up so many future programs and immediately places Priest in the top mix to create some fresh feuds. The rest of Judgment Day joins Priest at the top of the stage as he holds up his new title. Snoop Dogg joins the announcers on commentary for the next match, and we also learn that a special guest referee has been assigned, which is none other than Bubba Ray Dudley. It is the Philadelphia Street Fight featuring the Final Testament team of Karrion Kross and the AOP against Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits. The babyface team comes out in Philadelphia Eagles colors, which was actually a very common theme for both nights. Tables and kendo sticks were immediately used in this one, and as the Profits are deposited at ringside, Lashley is left at a 3-on-1 disadvantage in the ring. Kross sets up a chair and hits a neckbreaker to Lashley on top of it, but Dawkins broke the pin. The AOP then hit the Super Collider on the Profits, and the heels stack the Profits and Lashley on top of each other, but B-Fab breaks the pin. Scarlett then gets involved, and her and B-Fab go at it. The basic finish is after Kross gets in Bubba's face, Bubba puts on his Dudley glasses and distracts Kross long enough to allow Lashley to hit a thunderous spear. The Profits and Lashley then hit the What's Up headbutt on Kross, and they tried to set up a table spot, but the first table just collapses. And I felt that they took a little too long to set up the second, to the point where it got very awkward. But they set Kross up on this other table, and Ford hit the frog splash so the babyfaces prevailed. Kayla Braxton is joined by Paul Heyman in the back, and these two are tremendous together. She basically asks Heyman what bloodline rules are, and Heyman basically responds that there are no rules. LA Knight is shown arriving to the building in a Slim Jim sports car that he won at SummerSlam. I believe this footage was from earlier in the day as we went right into the match between Knight and AJ Styles. AJ races to the ring and they immediately start brawling. Knight has the early advantage and he continuously bounces AJ's head off the announce table with fans doing the yeah chants for each bounce. AJ then manages to clip Knight's knee getting back into the ring and starts to work over it for basically the rest of the match. And I thought Knight did a great job of selling here. In fact, great storytelling by both guys. There was a spot where Knight flipped AJ completely 360, or actually 270 or whatever it was, off the top rope with a German suplex, and AJ landed on his chest. From there, AJ continued to work over Knight's knee and applied the calf crusher, but Knight reached the ropes. They teased a count out at one point, and Knight literally got into the ring at 9.9. AJ tried a springboard 450 splash, but Knight got his knees up. He went for the same move later on, but this time Knight sprung up to his feet and tripped AJ up from the top rope and then hit the BFT for the win. The Hall of Fame class was brought out for the next segment, and then we went right into the triple threat match for the US title with Logan Paul defending against Kevin Owens and Randy Orton. The entrances were probably the most unique thing about the match. I mean, the match was good, but I think the entrances were more memorable. Logan came out to the ring in his prime monster truck, and then right before KO comes out, he's met in Gorilla by Sami Zayn with his new title. And Zayn tells Owens, now it's your turn, which was a pretty cool moment. Owens comes out to the ring with his graphic shown in ECW colors on the big screen, and he also rides to the ring in the same golf cart that was used on the previous SmackDown. And then this was pretty funny. As Orton makes his entrance, Owens backs the golf cart up, all the way up the ramp, and offers Orton a ride all the way down to the ring. The two babyfaces start by working together against Logan, who is constantly trying to get them to fight each other. And for some reason, Paul is also draped in Philadelphia Eagles colors, which we would think is an odd choice for a heel to be supporting the city sports team. But I don't know too much about football, so maybe I'm reading too much into it. Both babyfaces chase Logan around ringside and eventually catch him and basically take turns bouncing him off the announce table. Back in the ring, Logan shoves Owens into Orton, again trying to get them to fight each other, but it doesn't work. Eventually, they do come to blows, though, as both guys go for a pin on Paul and discover that they can't both win. Orton tries to strike first with an RKO, but Owens blocks it and realizes that this is how it's going to be. As the two faces argue, Logan catches them with a double buckshot lariat. He then delivers a swanton bomb on Owens, and then without a wasted motion hits a huge splash on Orton, which was as smooth as silk. There was a great spot where Logan and Orton just traded European uppercuts back and forth, with Paul eventually getting the better of the exchange. He goes for another buckshot, but is caught this time into a power slam by Orton. Paul eventually gets the knockout shot on Orton with brass knuckles, but Orton kicks out. Orton comes back with an RKO and then goes to pick up the Knux, but throws them away, deciding he doesn't need them. Orton sets up for the punt, but the guy in the prime bottle at ringside reaches in and pulls Logan out of the ring. He removes his face mask and Graves reveals his identity as Iso Speed, one of Logan's entourage guys. This guy starts barking at Orton at ringside and Orton drops him and then puts him through the announce table with an RKO. Back in the ring, Owens hits a pop-up powerbomb on Paul and then a stunner on Orton for two. He tries for another pop-up powerbomb on Orton, but Orton counters into an RKO. Paul then dumps Orton to the floor and hits a frog splash on Owens to keep the title. I really like that Paul didn't just pin Owens after the RKO and actually hit an extra move to put him away. It's always the little things that matter the most. Bayley challenged her former Damage Control teammate Io Sky up next for the SmackDown Women's title. Bayley had a pretty cool entrance where she was basically carried out on the shoulders of these modern-day gladiator-looking guys like she was some sort of an Egyptian goddess, as she had images of pyramids on the screen behind her. Io hit a sliding dropkick to Bayley's leg into the ring post and then basically worked over the knee for the remainder of the match. And Bayley did a great job of selling. Io tried for the moonsault later and Bayley instinctively got her knees up to block, forgetting about the pain. Io tried another moonsault which missed, and then Bayley hit the rose plant, but Io actually did a forward flip to counter, which looked really good. Bayley later hit the Macho Man elbow drop off the top rope, and then a second rose plant to finally claim the title. I thought this match was good, but just forgettable compared to some of the others on the card. Up next, there is a promo for Backlash, which takes place in Lyon, France next month. And then a few celebrities are shown at ringside, including SNL's Michael Che, NFL star George Kittle, who got unmercifully booed, rapper T-Pain, and former Disney Channel actress and singer Vanessa Hudgens. I'm actually shocked that they never showed Drew Barrymore on camera. She was shown on the kickoff on night one that nobody watched, but I mean, come on, she was the biggest star there. Snoop Dogg returned to the ring accompanied by the Philadelphia Eagles cheerleaders and announces the two-night total attendance record. And then we went right into the main event for the WWE Universal title with Roman Reigns defending against Cody Rhodes under Bloodline rules, and Reigns is initially only accompanied by the wise man Paul Heyman. Reigns is actually performed to the ring by a live orchestra, similar to his entrance last year. Cody gets the early advantage until he goes shoulder first into the ring post. At ringside, Cody goes for a table, but Roman catches him with a drive-by dropkick. Reigns then breaks out a kendo stick, but Cody turns the tables and locks on a figure four, which Reigns breaks after a rake to the eyes, because the announcers pointed out that reaching the ropes will not break the hold under Bloodline rules, which I thought meant that the Bloodline could basically make up the rules as they went along. They fight through the crowd for a bit, and then back in the ring, Cody hits the first crossroads for a near fall. Reigns comes back with a powerbomb through the announce table, and then hits a Superman punch for two. Roman goes for a rock bottom, but Cody counters and spears Roman. Cody then delivers two more crossroads back-to-back, but then Jimmy Uso comes out and attacks. He drops Cody with a super kick, but then Jay comes out. Jimmy meets Jay in the entranceway, and they continue their brawl from the night before, with Jay spearing Jimmy off the stage and both go crashing through a table. Back at ringside, Roman spears Cody through the barricade. Cody comes back with two more consecutive crossroads, but then Solo comes out and drills Cody with a Samoan spike, which led to the finish last year. This time, Cody kicked out. Solo then starts yelling at Roman to finish him, and Roman struggles to his feet. They deliver a combination spike and spear, but Cody kicks out again. John Cena then makes a surprise appearance. He races to the ring and takes Solo out. Cena then drops Reigns with an AA, and then hits another AA to Solo through the announce table. The Rock then finally comes out, and the final boss drops Cena with a rock bottom. The Rock then grabs the weight belt and targets Cody, but then the music of the Shield plays, and Seth Rollins comes out in his former Shield gear, entering from the other side of the ring, though before he can even do anything, Roman drops Seth with a Superman punch. The Rock once again sets his sights on Cody, but then we hear the gong and the place goes nuts as the lights go off for a few seconds, and as they come back on, the Undertaker is standing behind The Rock. The Rock takes a swing, but Taker beats him to the punch and drops Rock with a massive chokeslam. I'm thinking this was supposed to be the spot for Steve Austin, but I've heard conflicting reports as to why Austin was not there, though I would say Taker was a reasonable substitute. As Taker disappears, Roman grabs a chair and targets Cody, but then sees Seth getting back to his feet with his back turned. So Roman finally opts to take his revenge after 10 years with a chair shot to the back of Rollins. Roman then goes for a spear on Rhodes, who gets a knee up to block, and then hits a trifecta of crossroads one after the other to finally put Roman's shoulders down for a three count and end his near 4-year title reign. Samantha Irvin was understandably in tears as she belted out the announcement that Cody Rhodes is the new WWE Universal Champion, and as I said they should have done, they ended up going all out with the celebration. They had Cody's family in the ring and all of the top babyfaces, including Randy Orton, Seth Rollins, John Cena, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, and Jey Uso join in on the celebration. Cody's wife Brandy was also there, as well as his mother Michelle, whom he presented with the title. Cody then took the microphone and invited out two guys that have been most influential to him, and that was Bruce Pritchard and Paul Levesque, who both came out to congratulate the champ. Cody then goes outside to hug Michael Cole, who is also in tears, and then shakes hands with both Graves and McAfee. The final shot is of Cody in the ring by himself as the pyro goes off, and this was an excellent finish to a great couple of nights. So another WrestleMania is now in the books. I will be back next week to talk about Impact Rebellion and also preview AEW Dynasty and the upcoming WWE Draft. Until then, I leave you with an ABC.